You mind if I record?
Nope, not at all.
Great.
Nope.
Excellent. So this interview, unlike the last, I think you've already done one of these. And unlike the last interview, which was very focused on specific sort of leadership and conceptualization questions, this is more big picture background stuff.
Okay.
And there's some sense in which I know you will have heard a lot of these questions before and answered them, not in our interview, but in other contexts.
Sure.
If you feel like you've given the answer already and you don't think there's anything else to say, that's fine. We can move on.
Okay.
But to start with, we know the official story of the origins of the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery. What's not in that story, from your point of view, that's important for historians to know?
Okay. I think if I go back to the press event, April 2006, and I've actually read the transcripts of that, the speeches by the chancellor, by the leadership of Wharf, including the board president and also the Morgridges. I think that April 2006 event really captures everything, and I think I don't have anything different to add to that, because I think that it's really what it is. It's very transparent. I don't think there's anything hidden or unexpected beyond what everyone said. I think that they covered pretty much all the reasons for creating the two institutes.
Okay. In the process of coming up with the idea and making it a reality, what do you think were the key challenges that had to be overcome in going from the idea to the institutes?
So I think one obvious key challenge is there's an appealing aspect to the phrase public-private partnership.
Yeah.
But the reality of also making it work is also very difficult and takes a lot of time. Fortunately, it takes time for many people, not just me, so it's not like I have to do this single-handedly. But I think going forward, because it is a unique opportunity and the benefits of the public-private partnership work out very well, it means the challenges of making it work are definitely worthwhile and worth doing, but there are challenges nevertheless.
Could you say a little bit about what some of those challenges are?
Yes. Well, I think you want the private part because of the speed and agility, and that's an implicit assumption, therefore, that the public aspect of it, including the state government, is slower and has more bureaucratic processes. Mm-hmm. And quite often, those two can come to a conflict where the public side, if it was just purely public, would do things a certain way, and similarly, the private side would do things a certain way, and now you have to have a compromise that's amenable to both.
Right.
And that takes time to negotiate.
So there's a lot of stuff about process, about the right way to move forward on an idea.
Right.
Okay. Have those challenges changed a lot over time? Are they different now, those collaborative challenges, than they were when you started?
I think some aspects of it have changed. I think originally part of the factors were the ethical issues surrounding embryonic human stem cells. Now the focus of the regenerative biology area has gone beyond that and to less controversial areas. So I think some aspects of the driving force for this public-private creation has changed. And so in a similar way, some of the top issues that we work with have changed also.
So because the issues have changed, the challenges of collaboration have changed?
I believe that's true, yes.
Does a shift away from the controversial territory of embryonic stem cells make the collaboration, the public-private collaboration, easier or harder?
I think on one level it makes it easier in terms of sponsorship and support, and especially the excitement and support from the people of Wisconsin through their elected representatives. I think that part of it is certainly easier.
It's easier now.
Yeah. I think on the other hand, the interactions with the university, as the details become more concrete as opposed to abstract, and as we get to the nitty-gritty of actually making working arrangements, understandably, the work gets more involved and complex as people grapple with the day-to-day issues of running laboratories and conducting research.
Now, would it be fair to say that MIR is perhaps farther along in its development than WID is at this point?
I think it is fair to say that it's further along in the development, but simply because, by design, the Morgridge Institute and its key scientific areas were chosen top-down, whereas the public side came through a bottoms-up process with a very rigorous and deliberate peer review process open to all competition. And it took several iterations and about a two-year process to finally come out with the five theme leaders who were selected.
Yeah.
So the themes for WID crystallized a few months after the corresponding parts for mortgage.
Yeah.
So I think that offset is still with us today, yes.
Does that make things complicated for you when you're looking for how to work with the Wisconsin?
No, it does not, because I was part of this idea of creating a blend of this top-down and bottom-up approach. But sticking to that guiding principle means that we don't want to contaminate the bottoms-up process with a top-down process. And so I try to give advice when asked, but otherwise I stay
out of it.
Stay out of the internal workings of WID. So in that sense, it has not been a problem.
Okay. Now, once again, the question is, what were the big picture reasons for establishing the institutes? And here we've read what's published in the media and the website, mm-hmm. read the transcripts. And in some sense, we want to know your perspective on the reasons. If there's one or two among the hosts that are typically given that really stand out.
Well, I think the thing that everyone mentions as a key part of the private part is the ability to move quickly, and especially in partnerships with the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give a latest example, the meeting that I just came out of mm-hmm. before this interview,
mm-hmm.
We had a couple of professors who have an interesting potential collaboratory project with a pharmaceutical company.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of their academic goals and also the nature of the way the pharmaceutical industry works, there are really no major IP issues involved mm-hmm. in creating some new green chemistry initiatives in process chemistry. Because the pharmaceutical industry, the IP all evolves around early phase discovery biology and clinical trials and so on. And the pharmaceutical industry is not built on IP around the process chemistry, a scale-up.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they will go out of their way to prevent royalty reach at that later stage into their intellectual property. And so if any collaborator or, for that matter, any toll manufacturer starts talking about IP on the process, they'll walk away and find another chemistry route.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, having been in the pharmaceutical industry. And yet, from a university perspective, where you're trying to take a large, complex organization with many different ideas and have a set of principles that applies across the board, you can get into a bureaucratic state where you can't make exceptions, or if you are going to make exceptions, you have to deliberate very carefully and understand why you're making the exceptions. So it could take many, many months, if not years, to reach a level of understanding to give the green light to the project.
Hmm.
Whereas in this example, I knew right away the faculty members what their academic goals were. I know the nature of this industry.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that it would be a complete waste of time for us to spend many, many months working on IP agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me all of 5 minutes or 10 minutes to agree that we should just create this quick project
mm-hmm.
to explore this green chemistry and whether we can make a new and safer process
mm-hmm.
for an important class of pharmaceutical ingredients.
Yeah.
And ultimately society benefits.
Yeah.
The academic advances in chemistry and chemical engineering can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a win-win situation. And yet the university would have approached it very differently.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. So the agility is the key,
yeah.
the key piece.
Right.
Why do you think that the institutes happened now instead of earlier or later? Why was this the right time?
Well, I think in some sense it is the right time because the funding opportunity also is important, and we had this three-way partnership. Mm-hmm. I think without the significant gift from the mortgages, it would have been difficult to imagine an institute on this scale.
Yeah.
And so part of it is that we would like to see this happen more often, but the reality is donations on this scale happen only on an infrequent basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is something that is very timely, and the campus community was in a good position to take advantage of it.
When you say it was very timely, what is that? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think while the University of Wisconsin historically was a pioneer in embracing interdisciplinary research, it is now timely in the sense that the entire world has now come up to speed on that concept, and it is well accepted, and it is something that everyone values. And so for Wisconsin to take interdisciplinary collaboration, take it to a new level beyond its strong history of achievement, it requires something new to take it to that next level. And in that sense, I think this was very timely, because when the competition is also now suddenly discovered interdisciplinary research, for Wisconsin to keep distinguishing itself, it has to do something bigger and better than what it had done previously.
So the arrival of the mortgage as gift created an opportunity to maintain the university's leadership?
In interdisciplinary research, yes.
Great. Yeah. So we have a list of people who were officially involved, a long list, in developing the idea for the institutes, and we've talked to quite a few of them already. Who, in your opinion, was really influential in the early stages?
I think there are several people who I think were in the right place at the right time and saw all the different pieces. Mm-hmm. I think the managing director of WARF, Carl Gulbranson, certainly as the leader of single most important organization that is a supporting foundation of the university's research programs, I think he was in the place to see all these different pieces. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to acknowledge the role of Governor Doyle mm-hmm. in seeing the potential of a Wisconsin Institute for discovery. And then finally, the mortgages themselves had been thinking about a major gift, and they had insisted on making a gift that would have interdisciplinary impact. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are obviously the three key sets of people that I think of.
And those people were obviously influential in different ways and for different reasons. Mm-hmm. So for Carl, you mentioned that it was his leadership in this research support institution
right. And
his capacity to see all the pieces, you
right.
said?
And the fact that he is the leader of an organization that is not internal to the university or part of the university, but is external to the university in one sense, but at the same time, as a sponsor of the university research, mm-hmm. Knows the university very well.
Yeah.
So I think being outside the university also gave him a certain amount of distance from a conflict of interest perspective.
Right, right. Is there a particular piece of the idea that feels like the way that he touched it and changed it?
I think WARF in recent years has transitioned from passively licensing inventions to big companies to more proactively engaging in the growth of the IP and idea through startup companies. Mm-hmm. And through that process, I think WARF and including Carl got into closer awareness of the role of collaborative interactions of people from different fields, because companies like Nimblegen and others mm-hmm. are all examples of companies that were created by people from very different fields getting together and collaborating. Mm-hmm. So I think the institutes are designed in a way to maximize collaboration. Mm-hmm. And that emphasis on interdisciplinary collaboration and creating an environment where collaboration can occur, mm-hmm. and not just by chance encounters at airport lounges, or mm-hmm. but actually creating an environment where collaborations are likely to occur, and with the intent of making it happen. I think that's a unique aspect of this design.
That deliberate focus yeah. on collaboration. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the governor had some influence in terms of marshaling the statewide resources. Right. Are there sort of, how else would you describe the governor's influence on the early foundation?
Well, I think the not just the early foundation, but even in the most recent iterations with a very difficult state budget,
yeah.
to stick to the original plan and come through with the budgetary support for WID, I think that was very important.
Yeah.
And I think for those of us who are not internal to that process and only seeing it from the outside, we can only imagine how difficult it must be
yeah.
to save the budget and keep it there yeah. when there's so many other competing priorities.
Yeah.
So I think our gratitude for having that should not be overestimated. I think in the earlier years, the appreciation of the role of infrastructure, including world-class buildings, as a foundation for the university's research excellence, mm-hmm. I think that was a very important factor as well.
Mm-hmm. So at some point he played a defensive role, along the way to make sure that once the idea was had, it was protected.
Right. I think in the most recent iterations with the budget, it was a very important defensive role.
Yeah. The mortgage's role is fairly clear, I think, so we'll move on past that. Yeah. Has anyone become, in particular, more important or influential in the more recent phases?
I think speaking for just Mortgage Institute for Research, and they're not fully formed yet, but we're in the process of forming this, we're going to create a world-class expert group of scientific advisory board members. Mm. And they're going to also provide an independent voice about the quality of the science and technology development that the Mortgage Institute will do. Because while we are private and independent university, we still want to be accountable to all our stakeholders. And we want to hold ourselves to the very highest standards of science. And this external scientific advisory board will be essential in creating an independent voice. Because we live in a culture that's all about checks and balances, going back to the founding of this country. And that's one thing I believe is really the key to the strength of this country and its institutions. Yeah. And the Mortgage Institute obviously wants to stick to that winning formula.
Yeah. And is that a relatively recent idea to have this external scientific advisory board?
No, this was always planned from the beginning, but it was one of the final things that we will do as we get closer to the completion of the building.
How are you identifying those people?
Well, I think the scientific advisory board, of course, is picked after the scientific themes are picked, because the advisors have to be experts in the areas related
Topical
to our areas
experts.
Of activities, right? And so after having picked our scientific areas, we picked our scientific advisory board through a process that involves members of our own board of trustees who are themselves outstanding scientists. We also conferred with some of the leading faculty members at the university. And we also got advice from an extended network of friends who have who are scientists who are familiar with the University of Wisconsin's strengths and traditions in the biological sciences and biomedical science and technology.
Are they mostly in the public institution side?
The scientific advisory board members are all external, pretty much all, with the exception of one or two faculty members who may come from the university campus. All of them are external to Madison.
Oh, but their own institutions. Are they drawn from both public institutions and private institutions?
Oh, yeah. So when we picked them, we did not pick them on whether they were private universities or public universities. In fact, some of them are with companies, yes.
Okay.
They may be corporate research fellows or people very experienced in research in the private sector.
Okay. Is there anyone who, in your view, is an unsung hero of this process? Someone who has played an important role, perhaps behind the scenes, without whose work things wouldn't be moving along as smoothly as they are?
I that's a great question, and I've never actually thought of it that way. Whether they're considered an unsung hero or not may be a matter of perspective. I think one of the strengths of the University of Wisconsin is its strong tradition of faculty governance, and it's a very open society. But one of the consequences of that is it's relatively rare to find an unsung hero, because it is not a hierarchical organization where people are buried down in the organization.
Yeah.
I think because of the transparency and strong tradition of faculty governance, people are heard.
Yeah.
And so I think... many people have made this happen and have contributed to this, and I think they're all relatively well known and appreciated.
Yeah. There could even be an administrative person or someone who's been at the center of a lot of things who you felt like has had a good sort of managerial or organizing influence.
And I think all of those people are appreciated and are very prominent. I can't think off the top of my head that there's anyone who's an unsung hero because it's a community that pretty much goes out of its way to recognize people for what they've done. And
so we're all pretty sung,
as
the case may be. All right. What would it mean for the institutes to be successful?
Well, I think if I kind of think about it from a macro level, in the 15 years I was on the faculty, from 83 to 97, the thing that I felt most frustrated about, and not just about UW-Madison, but about academic research in general, is that it's very clear to me the role that new science and technology and knowledge have in fostering the economic growth of this nation. And yet, it seemed like the mechanisms for reinvesting that economic growth back into basic knowledge and creation, that mechanism was largely broken. And in comparison with other developed economies, or even developing nations, we were spending a smaller percentage of our economy in basic research. Mm-hmm. And I felt that rather than just complaining about it, the faculty themselves and the knowledge creators should take matters into their own hands and proactively come up with ways of creating new mechanisms for reinvesting the economic growth back into basic research. So I see the Mortgage Institute and in the WID, the two institutes in general, but especially the private institute, being a role to play out that desire to find new mechanisms. So for me, success would look like an institute that is able to figure out a way to convert knowledge into new economic growth and then channel that new economic growth back into supporting basic research, not just at Mortgage, but at the entire university. And if we can do that 10, 20 years down the road, and we look at that and we see those processes working, then I think this would have been a big success.
Is that mostly through control over intellectual property?
I don't think intellectual property has to be controlled. A great example to me of something that is not controlled would be you collaborate with the private sectors, including startup companies, and help accelerate their growth, what's called business acceleration. They become wildly successful, the next Google or the next Intel or Microsoft. And then the founders, because of their strong university ties, donate a big part of their wealth back to the university, in the way the mortgages have done. So the next generation of philanthropists, to the extent that they're associated with startup companies that are successful, that's an example of giving back to the knowledge creation process without it being any form of control. But it's just by helping people achieve that level of success so they're in a position to support their roots.
Right. And they're creating those ties that will make them inclined to do it.
That's right. And I think for that, that's a gray area of, how do you foster a sense of community? And I think those are research challenges in the social sciences, perhaps. Because I know many examples where it's not done well.
Yeah, it's true. And that's the sort of thing that is a very good sort of a long-term success benchmark. It'll be hard to see that in the first few years.
That's right.
Yeah. If we look in a closer time scale, say 5-10 years, what would convince you personally that the institutes were succeeding?
Again, going to the business acceleration as an example, it's not that they have to become billionaires and return back to the university the gifts to create the next generation of knowledge. But if you look at companies that currently have a half a dozen employees, and they collaborate with the Mortgage Institute, and we can help them grow to 100 to 200 employees in half the time of previous benchmarks, and increase the number of companies that make that successful transition. That would be an example of the Mortgage Institute fulfilling its vision for business acceleration.
So in some sense, the evidence of success is outside of the institute, not within the institute itself.
Yes, outside of the institute in the sense of outside the building.
Right.
But my hope is that the people who are successful are somehow affiliated with the institute. Maybe they are former students or or alumni of the university who were associated with the institute during their time at the university. Or maybe they're affiliate members. Or maybe these are companies founded by the university faculty and students that are members of our consortia. And so in that sense, they're part of the institute. I think there are a number of ways that these ties can be made.
There's a sense of an extended institute beyond the people who are officially part of it.
And then in terms of academic impact, so I talked about business acceleration, in terms of academic impact, if we can point to high-risk, high-reward research, where the traditional mechanism of ecosystem of funding between the funding agencies and the universities, if that was insufficient for a group of faculty and students to take a risk and embark on a major project, and if the Mortgage Institute helped make that happen, and then those turned out to be big new areas that suddenly become the mainstream research of the biomedical sciences, and we helped make that happen, that would be another measure of success.
Yeah. Now, oftentimes people who are at your position in a leadership role can look ahead and see the stumbling blocks which are waiting to happen. What problems are you going to run into?
Well, I can see part of the problem is always going to be space, right?
Yeah.
I've yet to see a university where the faculty think there's more space than they need. And so we always have an overabundance of ideas in comparison with space and other resources. So that will always be a challenge. One of my lessons learned from my time working at the National Science Foundation is the asymmetry of the world. If you have 10 people applying for something and you give the resources to one person, a naive theory would say, okay, you've got at least one person happy and 9 people very unhappy. But the reality is there are 9 people who are mad at you, and the one person who should be happy with you is not that happy because every one of those 10 people who applied thought they deserved it.
Right.
So the one person who got it thinks, you obviously made the right decision. Who else would you give the money to or the resources? So they're mildly happy that their talents were justly recognized.
Right.
And then there are 9 people who are extremely unhappy, wondering what you have against them that you didn't pick them.
Right.
So that's the asymmetry and the curse of people who have resources and decisions involving resources.
Yeah.
So that will always continue to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so that plus the overabundance of good ideas means that you can always anticipate problems in terms of allocation of resources.
Do you find yourself very involved in those space decisions now?
Yes and no. I mean, we did divide up space. But we also made some decisions to keep space flexible, and a portion of the space on the mortgage side is set aside for visitors and other incubation-type opportunities, so they come and go in a very fast time scale measured in months, not years.
Yeah.
And so that was something that I was a proponent of and am a proponent of, and we've stuck to that so far.
Did anything really change in those early discussions about space?
I think on the mortgage side, we've pretty much kept things into a consistent conversation over the past 2 years. I think on the WID side, it changed because until we knew what the 5 winning themes were, it was hard to estimate the space needs.
Right. Yep. So there was a lot that was unknown.
Right.
We're almost done. Yep. There are a lot of other people who are going to be looking at what the institutes do.
Yes.
People at the university level, state, the general public. What do you think those groups would see as success?
I think starting at the largest level and then zooming in, I think from the people of the state of Wisconsin and their elected representatives, I think what they would see would be the economic development and success. So if Mortgage Institute plays a role in business acceleration, and leverages the unique capabilities of this building and the institutes, and is responsible for the acceleration of the number of companies that go through that dramatic growth spurt. A great example, of course, is the Research Park. If you look at the entire occupancy of the Research Park and the number of high-tech jobs and so on, compared to what was planned when it was first set up, when the university farm was converted to a research park, it's that kind of transformation that I think would resonate with the people of the state. With the university, I think what I alluded to before about our ability to go after some big high-risk projects that also can have a huge impact. Wisconsin is rightly famous for more than its share of such transformations and contributions to the knowledge base of all branches of science and beyond. And I think if the Mortgage Institute can help make that happen and continue to make that happen, that would be a success from the university perspective.
What about other universities?
Well,
do you think they're watching what goes on here?
Yes, it is true that this private-public partnership is being watched. And it's also interesting to notice that it's being watched from far away, including Asia, because many of these developing countries now have entrepreneurs who become extremely wealthy. And so they're thinking through that their research institutes may not be solely government-based or government-sponsored as in the past, that they should also look into private-public partnerships.
Yeah.
And so they're also looking at the Mortgage Institute from that perspective as well.
Yeah. Okay. Is there an audience that I'm missing there? We've got universities elsewhere, entrepreneurs elsewhere, there's a state, there's a general public, our university here.
Well, I think students. I think students are important too because they're our future. It's also the way this building and its collaborative environment was designed was to foster a valuable space for the entire community, including the students. Mm-hmm. I think the entrepreneurship clinics, and there are many aspects of this building that are designed to support opportunities for students. Mm-hmm. And I think whether they have a formal relationship through fellowships and other forms of support from Mortgage Institute, or whether it's because they take advantage of the entrepreneurship clinics and other events occurring at the in the building, mm-hmm. There are many ways in which I think the students will benefit from the creation of the two institutes.
Do you feel like they know to be looking for, at the institutes right now, the students? Do you think they're really aware of what's going on?
I think they read about it, and it's in the general buzz. And, of course, the building is so big that it's hard to be not noticed.
Sure.
But I think once it's open and they can go in and see what the environment is like, they'll find a lot of very pleasant surprises, I believe.
Yeah. Do you find yourself... Now, obviously, at the early stages, there's a lot of getting people excited. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain point, which you know from your many roles in government and private sector and the university, that it becomes important to manage expectations. Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself doing a lot of that work now?
Yes. So managing expectations, I would say there's one big category that I've had to manage right away from the very beginning, which is, and it's a fine point about nonprofit organizations that the vast majority of people, including myself, did not appreciate, mm-hmm. that there are entities like WARF that mm-hmm. are known as sponsoring organizations mm-hmm. or sponsoring foundations. So they exist to give money or grants to another entity.
Right.
And then there are nonprofit organizations, including the Mortgage uh-huh. Institute, that are called like medical research organizations that are what I call doing organizations. In other words, they are also nonprofit, but their primary role is to actually conduct the work or their mission, and they're not in the business of giving grants to another party. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the beginning, when the project was jump-started to create buzz, using the Mortgage Institute umbrella, a number of awards and grants were given. Actually, legally, they were given by WARF, mm-hmm. But it still had the Mortgage name on it. So I think a big segment of the university population misunderstood that to mean that the Mortgage Institute is also a grant-making body. Mm-hmm. But what we are is we are a medical research organization. We conduct medical research.
Yeah.
Now, in that process, we bring in people, including university faculty and students, into that process.
Right.
And through that activity, these individuals may benefit and their own academic goals may be furthered.
Right.
But we are not in the process, and according to our charter, we cannot be doing the same way as a foundation of giving grants to others. And so I've had to manage that expectation and explain to people mm-hmm. That going forward, here's how the Mortgage Institute will operate. And through its operation, it will have all these benefits and it will help a lot of people.
Right.
But it's not by giving grants to A,
right.
B, and C.
The misunderstanding about what it is that you do.
Yeah.
Last question.
Yeah.
What's on your mind most today? When you think about what's the problem that you feel like you're trying to solve today about the Mortgage Institutes for
Research? Well, I think if I would take a snapshot right now, the most difficult thing about the first half of 2010 is that we're at the point where the complexity has gotten very high and lots of expectations have come together, but because the building isn't ready yet, it won't be occupied for another 6 months. We're in a vulnerable point where there's actually very little that we can actually do in terms of conducting our research.
Mm-hmm.
But expectations have continued to increase. And so if you could kind of do a mathematical operation of take the difference between expectation and achievables, we're at the biggest gap right now.
Yeah.
And that gap will, of course, close once we occupy the building and we're in a position to do some activity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are getting impatient.
I wouldn't say impatient, but it's just that, and especially given that when you build buildings and infrastructure, there's a lot of sunk cost.
Yeah.
So now, especially for those who are directly involved in paying for it, including the trustees, the state of Wisconsin, and so forth, there's a certain growing apprehension about, okay, now we've made this big commitment, Whereas we want great things to happen, but we understand intellectually it can't happen until the building is ready. But human nature being what it is, emotions are running high in the sense that this gap is now at its maximum.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was inevitable.
But that's inevitable.
It's hard.
And I was prepared for that.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'm out of questions, and I know you have another meeting. So just as our sort of pro forma, this is the post-interview.
Okay.
What level of embargo, if any, do you want?
Oh, none. That's
okay.
So let me just go ahead and sign that. Where do I select no embargo?
So I would say initial here and then here.
Initial here and...
Here. It can be released immediately. It can be made part of the archive immediately.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, and let me see if there's
anything. Do I need to initial that too, or just check that?
Just down here. That's fine.
Okay.
And just down here.
Yep.
Great. Excellent. Thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. Every time I think there's nothing else to learn about this, I discover that there is, in fact, something else to learn about it.
Okay.
So I'm sure we'll be in touch with you for stuff later on.
Okay.
And...